Well, hello there, and hello again, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew would like to thank you for once again joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. The day's date is Saturday, September 13th, 2014, and this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., back in the saddle again and assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting, exhilarating, and awesome internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as promised, we are back again. And, hoping each and every one of you enjoyed the summer marathon. If you guys couldn't get enough OTR with that, then I just don't know what else we can do to help you. Let's get things rolling here tonight by allowing me to introduce to you the presenter for tonight's program. He just so happens to be the MSS director. Yep, you might have guessed already, Miguel Amaro. Yep, we got him to put down his papers and stop shuffling around the office and drug his butt back into the studio so that he can do one of the things that he does best. And that is providing you with the highest quality OTR surprises that are within his powers to create. But anyway, enough jabbering. Let's get the show started. Without any further delays, if everyone could just please grab those drinks and snacks, sit back, get very, very comfortable, and enjoy the program. Miguel, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Luis. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Michael's Saturday Surprise for this Saturday. Gonna do things a little bit different today. Everybody here, I think, likes history. I recently recorded a series called CNN's The 60s, which covers all the events and goings-on that happened during the 1960s. Very historical in nature. We are going to start with episode 1 of CNN's The 60s, Television Comes of Age.
Camera's all set.
Stand by.
Here we go.
8-1.
Jeff, watch the TV.
The average time spent watching television is 5 to 6 hours per day.
Holy residuals.
There's a reason for calling it the boob tube and the idiot box.
Let's change the channel.
We want to rap about our scene.
Yeah!
Here is De Niro.
We must give the American viewer the kind of television that he both desires and deserves.
Okay, let's try it, do it again, and we'll see what it comes out this time.
Television has grown faster than a teenager. Now it is time to grow up.
TV was the center of the house. I don't remember a time without TV.
By 1960, essentially every household in America had a television. It was a new way of bringing the world to you.
When something big happened on television, it really did happen to the entire country and impacted the entire country at the same time.
Keep an awakened eye on the world.
Suddenly, television was the main event. Everything else changed. Even the way in which you went about the business of getting someone elected president.
Here it is. You're on my side.
Sold out.
You didn't have cameras
again.
Sold out.
quit machine.
David, will you hit the 1 minute button, please? The 30 seconds and the cut, please.
In 1960, the Nixon-Kennedy debate was a first in television. A lot of people were watching that night, and it introduced a lot of people to Kennedy.
Will you let me see the tight shot on camera one, please?
You hear me now speaking? Is that about the right tone of voice?
Good evening. The television and radio stations of the United States and their affiliated stations are proud to provide...
When the networks offered a debate, Kennedy immediately said yes, because he was sure he could do better than Nixon.
I think Mr. Nixon is an effective leader of his party. I hope he would grant me the same. The question before us is, which point of view and which party do we want to lead the United States?
Mr. Nixon, would you like to comment on that statement?
I have no comment.
If you're live on television and there's a camera right here, there's really no place to hide. Once you see a guy sweating when asked a question, are you sure he's the leader for you?
That's the question before the American people, and only you can decide what you want. What you want this country to be, what you want to do with the future. I think we're ready to move.
If you saw it on television, clearly Kennedy had won that debate.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for permitting us to present the next president of the United States on this unique program. Other debates in this...
It was the beginning of a new form of political craftsmanship. If you could structure your message appropriately for the TV camera, you could have a huge impact. And if you couldn't, you were toast.
I would like you now to give a real tonight welcome to the Senator from Massachusetts, Mr. John Kennedy. May I ask you, so that I don't look too naive, a tough question right off the bat?
And whether I'm a Democrat or Republican?
No, David.
People recognized that television was now the medium that mattered. It wasn't before 1960, and it was every day after 1960 in those presidential debates.
Oh, honey, let's go watch that. Try to find a Western.
All right.
Once everyone had a TV set in their living room, and advertisers had fully gotten a grip on how effective this was a way to sell products, the very definition of what you were doing was to create entertainment that would appeal to as many people as possible.
Beaver, eat your Brussels sprouts.
See, Mom, I can't. My stomach's filled right up to my throat.
Now, no excuses.
Leave It to Beaver was something that a lot of families understood. It's the first show that was ever shot from the perspective of a child.
Beaver.
Most people have had a lot of the experiences that the Beaver or Wally had, and everyone in their life has an Eddie Haskell.
Hi, Wally. Some dumb kid fell in a soup. Good evening, Mr. Cleaver. Some poor unfortunate child is trapped up there.
Everyone has that moment when they were so embarrassed and they thought they'd never get over it, but they did.
Tonight's special report of the scene of the 1961 Emmy.
It isn't whether it's a situation comedy or whether it's a Western or whether it's a drama. I think it's the quality of the show itself that's important.
The Andy Griffith Show, Mayberry, it's just a kinder, gentler place. Be hard not to want to live in Mayberry.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Barn.
Hello.
The core of The Andy Griffith Show was this rock at the center of it, calm wisdom.
I have taken the best parts of myself and people that I've known all my life and put them into Andy Taylor.
Hope there comes a time when you have to stop the play acting. Tell the truth.
Don't you believe me, Paul? Don't you, Paul?
People appreciate emotional honesty. They appreciate it more than laughs. It's great if you can achieve both simultaneously. And the Andy Griffith Show actually did that very often. For a sitcom, it shows an unexpected depth.
So how do we think of the new format? The second dance number should come before the big sketch.
Gee, I don't know.
I like it.
Now I like it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I like it too. What do you know? Look at that tie you're wearing.
I only wrote what I knew about, which was my life. And if you're writing about that, nobody can say, that's not true. It is true. I'm living it.
On the Dick Van Dyke Show, we could believe the actions of the characters because we could relate to them. This wasn't a genie in a bikini in someone's bottle on their mantle. These were real people.
Women are more
more...
honest and direct?
No. They're more...
courageous?
We all have the same needs, feelings, relationships with husbands and wives. That was the kind of comedy we did. The problems of living.
Honey, how much do you like that baby?
You're jealous already.
The season opening episode for the 1963 season was seared into my head.
Now, our wives had a baby on the same day in the same hospital, and the hospital was very busy, Mr. Peters. What am I getting at?
They thought they got the wrong baby from the hospital. So he calls the parents of the other kid and thinks, you know, we may have your kid, you may have our kid.
Hi, we're Mr. and Mrs. Peters.
Come in.
It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Here they're tackling a subject without tackling it.
Why didn't you tell me on the phone?
I missed the expression on your face?
The network worried about the fact that the African Americans might be upset by it. The network was always a little behind. There's always somebody back there who doesn't have B-A-W-L-S, balls.
In Hollywood, the winner, Carl Reiner, Dick Van Dyke.
I wish somebody had told me I would have worn my hair.
I was going to tell you this one. You know those knock-knock jokes?
Yeah, well, they're old now.
Yeah.
It's a new one.
I got a good one. I got a real funny one.
All right.
Go ahead, start. Say knock-knock.
I say?
Yeah, go ahead.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
There's only three networks, and there was only one late night show, really, and it was Jack Parr.
They don't understand how we do the show. We just keep talking.
I know. It's agony.
Jack Parr invented the late night television talk show.
You feel confident that you'll...
There's not a man in the world to beat me. I'm as pretty as Liberace.
Jack had in his corner his personality. His fabulously interesting, complex, frightening, neurotic, but in other cases, enthusiastic and informed personality. It made for great television.
How much time have I done? I don't have a watch either. How much?
Nine.
Has it been charming? I'll quit now, then. I'm not going to.
Here's Johnny!
Johnny Carson inherited The Tonight Show, but he made it his own.
It's going to be wild tonight. I can always tell.
He hosted a nightly party.
Are you married?
And if his buddies came and they started playing together, you felt like what it must have felt like to go to Vegas at 3 a.m. and have the Rat Pack come on.
Where's the guy you talk to?
It was a beautiful thing to watch a guy working at his best.
Okay, bingo.
Well, do we have
a go? Get your axe and let's go.
If you watch it closely, he's gauging how much longer he can wait to let the laugh die before what he says will be irrelevant to what happened. And he gets it just on the nose. It's beautiful to watch.
I didn't even know you were Jewish.
Johnny was the best audience in the world. And he loved comedy.
And the woman's watching him. She's watching him from the corner of her eye. She says to him, what are you looking at? The guy says, I'm looking at that ugly baby. That's a bad-looking baby, lady.
Johnny was there listening for you. He wanted you to score. And when you scored, he scored.
Conductor said, now calm down, Lee. He said, madam, the Pennsylvania Railroad will go to any length to avoid having differences between the passengers. He said, perhaps it would be more to your convenience if we were to rearrange your seating. And as a small compensation from the railroad, if you'll accompany me to the dining car, we'll give you a free meal. Maybe we'll find a banana for your monkey.
I'm Dick Cavett, funnier than Chet Huntley, taller than Mickey Rooney, and as pure and honest as Newark, New Jersey.
The Dick Cavett Show was amazing because you could get people like Norman Mailer and Woody Allen.
My only New Year's resolution this year, I think I'm going to try and sleep through the Nixon administration. You know?
You would have authors on. You would have heavyweight boxers. There were conversations.
When you mention the national anthem and talk about playing it in any unorthodox way, you immediately get a guaranteed percentage of hate mail from people who say, how dare
anyone. That's not unorthodox.
It isn't unorthodox?
No, no. I thought it was beautiful. But then there you go.
I just thought anything that's interesting ought to have a place on a talk show rather than young, pretty actresses who use the word excited in every sentence.
You're not frequently seen on television. Is that by choice or...?
Well, of course, it is the most impressive medium of all. It's the medium that's going to either save America or send it down into demise. There's no question about it.
I'm getting out of it myself. Really. We'll be back after this.
What you do is you book the best possible guests from different kinds of businesses. Maybe not everybody in show business, some politics, some newspaper people. Get them all on a stage together and hope that something works. But it's a great show. It's a great platform for people who have something to say.
The point is that they take these scripts out of the drawers, they change the things around. Maybe it doesn't work with Green Acres, but on many of these shows, and that's why night after night you turn on these serials and they all seem as if they came out of the same bread box.
Back then, you had lots and lots of copycats. You've got the Addams Family, and then you have the Munsters. You've got Bewitched, and then you've got I Dream of Jeannie. You know, the old saying is, imitation is the sincerest form of television. So if one person is doing this fantastical hit, we're going to do that.
Now, is that considered a crime?
I'm afraid not. There aren't any laws to protect us against bad TV shows yet. So you're safe.
Thank you.
What I'm surprised by are some of the shows that I can't even imagine the pitch meetings for, like Hogan's Heroes.
It's a story about American prisoners of war in a Nazi concentration camp, which doesn't exactly sound like it's a funny comedy.
Why don't they trust us, Schultz?
That shows you how weird the 60s was right there.
Here's another one of our fine shows for this year. Vroom, Pit Stop. The moving story of an effeminate race car driver who is really an astronaut for the mafia. 9:30 Eastern Time, 8:30 Central Time, 2:15 Pacific Time.
CBS presents this program in color.
I didn't have color television until I was 16 years old. Yes, I lived like an animal.
The following program is being brought to you in living color on NBC.
Getting the color TV was huge because suddenly we could watch Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color on Sunday nights, which was like just an acid trip of a show. We just could not believe it. Tinkerbell going bing, 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 and it was like, oh, it was like special effects par excellence.
The world is a carousel of color.
That also happened, just coincidentally, at the time when what we think of as the mod 60s came in. Colors were all over the place, just as TV could start to take advantage of them.
Hi.
Well, glad you could make it.
I remember saying, stay tuned for Gidget next, in color.
Wednesday night, September 15th, in color on ABC.
It was a big marketing thing.
Color TV was a huge step forward as far as the technology went. And yet, I think of Lost in Space. Lost in Space started off as a black and white show and then went to color. It didn't get any better when it went to color.
Dr. Smith, you're alive.
Of course I'm alive. Do I look like a corpse?
The period has a reputation for being TV as a kind of candy. It sometimes felt like there was this really aggressive innocence to it.
You're only to blow that in an emergency.
This is an emergency. You're staying on my foot.
Gilligan's Island makes no sense whatsoever logistically.
Gotta make the spider drunk.
How is the professor able to build all this stuff but not build a damn raft?
What, with this stick of crude dynamite that I made?
It makes no sense if you pull any single thread on it, but it was just like the kind of show designed to live forever in syndication.
What are you looking for?
The nun. Who else?
Are you kidding?
Flying Nun is the most... It's a crazy show. Like, what is that about?
Look, Carlos, it's very simple. You see, I only weigh 90 pounds, and the combination of my cornet and the wind lifts me.
It was just complete nonsense, let's face it. It was in the height of the 60s, and everyone was eating granola and dropping out and doing God knows what else, and I wasn't.
Hello, Central. I'm switching to my eyeglasses. Put a hold on my wallet, but keep my shoe open.
Television, more than ever in the 60s, was a place to escape to.
Let's go.
Seemed like it was almost sort of a willful respite from the stuff that was going on out in the world and in real life.
Here's a bulletin from CBS News. There has been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from...
Until the early 60s, television news was by and large seen as something of a backwater to print journalism and even to radio. But the Kennedy assassination was the moment that television journalism came of age.
We'll continue full-day coverage of the presidential funeral and final procession to Hollywood.
More and more people were depending on television to give them the headline news of the day.
330 Americans were killed in combat last week in Vietnam, but the number of wounded, 3,886, was the highest of any week in the war.
Most of the 1960s, the contrast between what you saw on your entertainment and what you saw on the news was, you know, planetary.
Never has this descent been as emotional, as intense.
In the 60s, it was one thing after another. Each year it was filled with important events.
Governor Wallace has ordered 500 Alabama National Guardsmen into Tuscaloosa. At the moment, they are under his control.
Whether it was the civil rights movement, or it was the Kennedy assassination, or the space race, when there was a huge thing that happened, it happened on TV.
A witness to that violence that it seemed to be unprovoked on the part of the demonstrators.
Television became the fire in which the whole tribe gathered around to listen to the elders tell them what was going on.
Police reinforcements moving down Balboa Street now.
Gentlemen, tonight, live from New York,
from Hollywood,
from beautiful downtown Burbank,
here is the star of our show, Bob Hope.
Variety was the backbone of television back then. One year, there were like 18 different variety shows. Everybody had a variety show.
It's the Jimmy Dean Show.
Everyone was different because of who was helming the show.
But it's
Dean Martin was just so loose. He acted as though he was doing the whole show drunk without a rehearsal.
This is a real international show. Now, where else could you see a smooth Italian and a slippery Pole?
He was funny. He was really, really funny.
He always looked as if he was a bit lost. People thought that it was because he was tiddly, but that was part of the charm.
Here he is, Ed Sullivan.
Thank you very much.
No matter who controlled the TV set the other nights of the week on Sunday night, you know, 8 o'clock, you were going to watch Ed Sullivan.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, a very fine novelty actor.
Ed Sullivan was a phenomenon, and he was a powerful force.
Quiet, please. Quiet.
The beauty of the Sullivan kind of variety show is that if you didn't like something, something else would be around in 4 minutes.
No, Johnny, no.
No, no.
Why? Why? It is very difficult.
Easy.
Advertisers wanted everybody. And so they got everybody, a little kid and his grandparents, who could watch the same show.
They would have an elephant on, and then the next thing, somebody doing Shakespeare, and then the next thing, a comic. There would be an acrobat, and then an opera singer the next bit, which was true variety.
Anything that was current was on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Here's young Richard Pryor.
Everybody wanted a showcase, and if you got on Sullivan, you knew you could talk about it the next. Did you see Sullivan?
My whole life, I don't get no respect. No respect from anyone.
As a performer, you couldn't get a better place to sell your product.
When I started out, they would say, variety is a man's game. It's Dean, it's Milton Berle, it's Jackie Gleason, it's, you know, the guys. But variety is what I know. I felt it was in my genes to do this.
She had been so good on the Gary Moore Show, she always knew she could sing and dance and be funny.
Honey, wear this.
On my show, I would do pratfalls and jump out of windows and get pies in the face, and it was heaven.
I think it's going,
oh, God. You know, I see a rerun of Carol Burnett's show, and I say, God damn, they're funny.
There's never been a better three-wall sketch show ever.
She was great in bed, too, Dickie. Remember
she's
that?
Top. You never went to bed with,
well.
I'm not supposed to curtsy, I'm supposed to bow.
Well, I get dizzy when I bend over.
When Tim Conway came on, his goal in life was to destroy Harvey.
Here's Tim with our own Harvey Korman as a brand new dentist with his very first patient.
We used to have a pool backstage, not as to whether Harvey was going to break up, but as to how far he could get along in the sketch before he broke up.
Okay, Novocaine. Here we are, Novocaine. Take a firm hold of the hypodermic needle. Right.
They never knew what he was going to do, but they knew it was not going to be what they expected.
When they did the dentist sketch, none of that was rehearsed.
Yeah, I'll be right with you.
Poor Harvey was helpless, tears coming down, and Tim swears that Harvey wet his pants during that sketch.
I don't know why that works so well. Watching two actors break character and just crack each other up should not be as entertaining. But somehow when it's Tim Conway and Harvey Korman doing it, I could watch that stuff forever.
I just thought, if we have fun, the audience will. We're going to go out there and do what we do best. And it worked.
You can plan it, you can write it, you can rehearse it, but you hope for some magic. And it was Carol. Carol, the magic of Carol Burnett.
Now, you say he's a TV addict. Well, perhaps he's been staring at this electronic blessing the television set for so long that his life has become his.
Yeah.
And he's reached such a stage of confusion that he no longer knows whether he's watching the action or is participating in it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension.
There was a desire on the part of writers and producers to push the envelope and stretch the medium. And you certainly saw that with The Twilight Zone. It was a very cinematic show.
This is not a new world.
It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time.
Rod Serling, who created The Twilight Zone, came to the realization that through a lens of fantasy or science fiction, he could actually tell stories about racism, he could tell stories about fascism.
Tonight, I shall talk to you about glorious conformity.
It was a way to deal with a lot of the issues that America was starting to go through at that time, but in a fantastic setting so that there's some divide between you and the show.
They sent four people, a mother and a father and two kids who looked just like humans, but they weren't.
The Twilight Zone had these little O. Henry-like twists on it and was allowed to have unhappy endings.
They pick the most dangerous enemy they can find, and it's themselves.
Now 6 months a fugitive, this is Richard Kemble with a new identity, and for as long as it is safe, a new name.
The Fugitive was kind of a somber character study.
Beware the eyes of strangers. Keep moving.
Everybody wanted to see what happens to the fugitive.
Well, the natural question is, how long is it going to go on? Will we ever find her?
I'm about ready to give up. I'm tired.
When it ended, it broke the viewership record set by the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. It was one of the first TV shows that actually went somewhere.
You know, Youngstown is not exactly on our course.
In a lot of ways, television was showing slices of the world that people they had never seen before. Route 66 was an innovative show because it was actually filmed on location. So the audience was being exposed to things that just weren't part of their local orbit.
Space, the final frontier.
You know, there's a little bit of the Mayberry aspect to the world of Star Trek, and that's going to sound like an odd analogy, but follow me here. People want to believe that such a place can exist. The idea of a future in which a lot of the biases and fears of the past has evolved out of us.
Where I come from, size, shape, or color makes no difference.
There's one episode where some of the members of the crew were taken over by these mental giants.
This psychokinetic power of yours, how long have you had it?
They forced Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura to kiss. It was the first interracial kiss on television.
NBC asked me if I would do my own special. And I had always adored Harry Belafonte. We decided to do one duet called The Path of Glory. It's an anti-war song, and we both felt very strongly about it. And I just touched his arm. The sponsor went crazy. My star doesn't touch a black man's arm.
But Shula Clark says, I'm not doing it over. And it's my show, and it's going in that way.
We weren't having any of that nonsense. No way. So it went out the way we wanted it to go out. I didn't really have any other problems with sponsors, but that sort of gave me a taste of what could happen.
A car that's moving fast and clean and strong. Get the Plymouth Beach, you can't go wrong.
In the TV business, the 60s was probably about the last decade during which the sponsors had a really iron grip on content.
Brought to you by Dash.
Even if they tried to keep TV this white, homogenous, whole milk product, the world found its way in. It could, it just had to.
Where's the trouble, driver?
Don't you ever remember to bring a silencer?
Ruins the line of my suit.
With I Spy, Robert Culp and Bill Cosby were equals. Cosby is this pioneer in terms of a black male lead in a drama. He made race a non-issue because he's undeniable.
The winner is Bill Cosby and I.
Bobby and I try and put forth an example of the way it should be racially in this country. We need more people in this industry to put forth that message and let it be known to the bigots and the racists that they don't count. Thank you.
As television changed, it was helping all Americans to understand that this is what America looks like.
Frankly, you're not exactly what I expected.
No?
No, not from what I've read here.
Did you expect me to be older or younger?
Julia was going to be the first time that a black woman starred in her own television show.
Has Mr. Colton told you?
Tell me what?
I'm colored.
What color are you?
She was a young black woman who had been educated, raising her son alone. It had a universality that was just something new.
And you'll keep out of mischief.
I'll just watch the old TV.
Good.
In the 60s, America was exploding in a way that needed to be reflected on TV.
Stand still.
Dragnet came back in the late 60s, and Friday was now in a very different world than he had been in the black and white days, and suddenly there were the damn dirty hippies.
I'll make your bookie's been dropping that acid we've been hearing about.
Jack Webb would lecture you about the dangers of marijuana smoking and crazy drug culture.
They're trying to deal with the counterculture, but they don't understand it. So it's just basically their stereotypes of what the hippies were like, and it plays exactly like that.
Keep your nose out of my purse.
Keep yours out of the acid. Next time I will.
NBC presents Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In.
Our country would be much better off with a strong leader.
I know, but Sinatra can't do everything.
When Laugh-In came along, we'd never seen anything that was kind of like grown-ups acting goofy and hip that way, you know? They had girls dancing in bikinis, and they had the joke wall.
Who's in there with you?
Cool Hand Luke!
And it was nothing but jokes.
I was at the hospital.
Oh, anything serious?
A black widow bit me.
Well, it never would have happened if he had been a gentleman.
Jug.
We took it to the network, and the network said, "What the hell is this?" I said, "This makes no sense." I said, "Right."
Hi. You too.
They acknowledged the hippie generation, yet the hosts were in tuxedos smoking cigarettes. They were still your parents. But the other people let loose on the show were this kind of young vaudeville.
She socked it to herself.
We knew that sock it to me didn't mean sock it to me, right? So we thought, oh.
Sock it to me.
Sock it to me!
Uh-huh. Sock it to me?
It was not as subversive as it sounds. Yes, it was. It was fun.
Sock it to me?
It was the first time a presidential candidate had ever appeared on a comedy show. And that may have got him elected. And I've had to live with that. Anyway.
The family that watches Laugh-In together really needs to pray together.
It just seemed like it's happening right now, and it's about right now. That was the greatest thing ever, that was a fusion of politics and comedy and everything else into one television show.
When we take over, I'm going to look out for you.
The subjects that were verboten, we don't talk about these things, were starting to come up in TV, and because it was well executed, it changed everything.
This is the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, production 124, air, take one.
Good evening, and welcome to the Smothers Brothers Show.
If Rowan and Martin and the Smothers Brothers are the new stars of TV comedy, it is the comedy itself, rather than the comedians, which is more often in the spotlight. These two programs have consciously tried to influence people by comedy techniques that break through the traditional song and skit routines, and by subject matter that is often on the cutting edge of what is new.
Our government is asking us as citizens, good citizens, to refrain from traveling to foreign lands. Okay, all you guys in Vietnam, come on home.
The times were changing so quickly in the 60s, and we didn't change them.
Are we...
We just reflected.
I can't hear you. What are you doing?
I'm getting ready to go to college.
CBS gave the Smothers Brothers that show because they were clean-cut folk satirists. You know, they wore blazers, they could sing well, they were funny.
Mom liked you best! You lower your voice.
Mom liked you best.
They told us what they thought we could do and what we should do, and it was totally wrong. And Tommy came in saying, I would like a show where we could be relevant.
If you ever get a war without blood and gore, boy, I'll be the first to go. But until then, Mr. McNamara.
I'm only 18 and got a ruptured spleen and always carry a purse.
The people in the counterculture start making these shows, and they don't want to play by the rules that other people did before then. But who would expect the Smothers Brothers, of all people, to be the ones raising this much of a fuss?
A good script.
I held my breath every time they did the show because I knew that the network people were befouling their trousers with fear.
Nothing funny in this. Here you are, boys, we're through censoring your show.
They said that the social subjects we touched on were not appropriate for the 9 o'clock family viewing hour. They came up with any excuse to make it difficult.
And I came up with any excuse to push it.
Yeah.
CBS would like to give us notice. And some of you don't like the things we say. But we're still here.
Oh, yeah, we're still here.
They were going to speak truth to power. And they were not compromising.
Do you have something important?
Something very important to say on American television.
You know, a lot of times we don't have opportunity of saying anything important because it's American television. Every time you say something, they try to say something important, they...
Well, whether you can say it or not, keep trying to say it.
That's what's important.
You get that? Yeah.
There's no way in the world, if anything's meaningful and truthful, that you're not going to offend someone. You've got to be able to... say what it is, say how it is, and take the consequence.
CBS announced today that the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour will not return to the CBS television network next season. Network president Robert Wood said it became evident that the brothers, quote, were unwilling to accept the criteria of taste established by CBS. CBS News efforts to reach the brothers for comment have been unsuccessful.
I was angry, but we never regretted it. We never did regret it.
What do you think of television, honestly? Do you think it's good?
Yes, I do. I think particularly for what it is, for the amount of hours that it gives you for enjoyment, either in education or for pure entertainment, it's remarkably good.
What television did in the 60s was to show the American people to the American people. Until then, we did not truly know much about each other. We knew only what we had seen, which was very little, and what we had read, which was even less.
A few years ago, I thought it was the end of the world.
Now it's just the beginning.
I think people looked at television for answers, maybe. The world's just confusing. It's going to hell all over the place. Maybe something on here will help.
There was no denying the shift in attitudes towards sex, towards race relations, towards politics. It was all televised.
That you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office.
When it works, television conveys impressions and evokes memories. When it works well, television makes us feel.
Good morning. It's T-minus 1 hour, 29 minutes, and 53 seconds, and counting.
Television created a sense of national unity around cultural events.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
You could turn on a machine and be somewhere else.
You're looking good here.
What?
Television changed absolutely everything.
Beautiful view. Isn't that something?
We'll be right back.
That was CNN's The 60s Episode 1, Television Comes of Age. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. Let me turn things back over to Luis so that he can put the finishing touches on tonight's presentation. Luis, my friend, come and tell these people how to post complaints, comments, grievances, questions, requests, and anything else that they may have.
Okay, Mike. Great work. And I will take it from here. Well, folks, it is that time again. The MSS Express has come to the end of the line, so I am going to have to gently but firmly conduct each and every one of you off the train. Because guess what? That's it. We're done. We want to take a break. I've said it before, and I will say it again. If you want some more of this good stuff, all you need to do is come back next week and join us. You know where, and you know when. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them to Mike Amelie at earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and turning over the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish. For as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, Mike might not decide to put on another program. So, on behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.